south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Here's a question I don't think anyone's asked before, but it's important. You'll see why, and it comes from Frankie. He's an expat who's been living in Antigua, Guatemala for at least 5 or 6 years now. He says, Johnny, are metal sinks in Latin America typically made of stainless steel? I've always been afraid to wash my produce in mine because I thought it was possibly made out of aluminum. However, I learned that curtain rods and many other things in my apartment are made of steel, so perhaps the sink is less toxic than I thought. All right, there's a little more to this email, but let's tackle that right now. He's talking about a stainless steel sink versus an aluminum sink. Now, they don't make sinks out of aluminum. It's just too soft. And if they did make them, after a month or so, it'd be just full of dings and scratches. Oh, and as far as aluminum being toxic, you know, it's everywhere these days. In other words, we're part of a grand experiment. We're guinea pigs for aluminum. And that really does bother me because, you know, if you check out scientific literature, you'll find out every single Alzheimer's victim, if and when they do a brain autopsy, they find aluminum pockets in the brain. You might say, so what? But the thing is, brain autopsies before 1960, that was before aluminum came into mass usage, showed no presence of aluminum. You know, the human body, in fact, all mammalian bodies, have absolutely no use for aluminum. It's toxic. There's no biochemical process that needs aluminum. So then you might ask, why is it collecting in people's heads then? Because it's everywhere, from kitchen utensils to food products. Yep, a lot of food additives have aluminum in them, as well as deodorants, household appliances, car parts, toys and flame retardants, airplanes, paint. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's even in the air we breathe, and not because it was there naturally. I don't know if you knew this, but very fine particles pour out of smokestacks in chemical and industrial process plants worldwide. So anyway, being that it's everywhere, it's good to cut down on it any way you can. And I know most of you listeners out there realize aluminum is not good. It's a problem. So you read the labels and try to minimize it. At least I hope you read the labels. And that's why some companies are producing deodorants without aluminum in them. Did I say aluminum in them? Yeah, that's right. I said aluminum in them. Meanwhile, the Brits say aluminium. I use those non-aluminium deodorants, but they don't work as well. Turns out aluminium is very good at plugging up your sweat ducts. And that can't be good. Though, there's another problem almost no one ever talks about. It's the fact that if you walk into any restaurant, look in the kitchen, you'll see aluminum pots everywhere. Doesn't matter if you're in the first world, third world, high-end restaurant, or off-the-books taco cart. You'll see all kinds of food simmering and frying in aluminum pots and pans. And really, think about it. What could be worse than that? You heat up aluminum. You heat up anything, what happens? The molecules vibrate and get more active, and they start escaping from the surface. In fact, that's why when you heat up something, anything, eventually you can smell it. Your nose happens to be picking up the atoms and molecules that have left the heated object and are now in your nose and lungs. Now, I've been in metal shops where they're cutting and drilling aluminum, and it has a smell to it. Makes me wonder how much of that is stuck in my brain now. So anyway, as far as minimizing your aluminum intake, the worst thing you could do is cook with it. That means, of course, in your own home, you should have stainless steel, Pyrex, cast iron, copper, or porcelain pots and pans. And stay away from restaurant food, too. You know, even those high-end restaurants, gourmet restaurants, have all kinds of aluminum pots and pans and utensils in the kitchen, simply because aluminum is cheap and light compared to everything else. Speaking of cheap and dirty, you know, 200 years ago, it wasn't that way. Back then, metallurgists hadn't learned how to produce it in bulk, so it was more expensive than gold. Believe it or not, back in 1800, Napoleon himself had a dinner set of forks and knives made out of aluminium, and his guests couldn't believe how light the stuff was. They probably all died of Alzheimer's, that is, if they didn't get the guillotine during the revolution. So we're talking about aluminium. My advice is avoid it as much as you can. You can start by throwing out your aluminum pots and pans, or give them to your enemies, and switch into stainless steel. Oh, and another thing, you're really screwing yourself if you use Teflon-coated pots and pans. You should get rid of those, too. And if you think that's excessive, just pull out any old Teflon-coated fry pan, and you'll notice in some places the finish is completely gone. It's worn off, right? Well, where do you think that finish went? It's inside of you, man. You and your family ate it. It's part of your DNA now. And, you know, if you look up DuPont and the Teflon lawsuits, you'll see that hundreds, if not thousands, of DuPont workers in the Teflon factory developed premature cancers in their kids' birth defects and died. And did you know that dozens of families were awarded million-dollar settlements? A lot of good that did them. But believe me, if you think Teflon's safe, you ought to see this very interesting movie that didn't get much play, but it stars Mark Ruffalo. It's all about how dirty DuPont plays and the Teflon lawsuits. The movie just came out last year. It's called Dark Waters. It came out to great critical reviews, but DuPont tried to kill it. So you probably never heard of it. It's called Dark Waters. Get it? And you'll never eat on a Teflon-coated pan again. Problem is, though, Teflon's also a fire retardant, so you'll find it in kids' clothes and mattresses, in all kinds of stuff, and you'll never know it. Really, get that movie, Dark Waters, with Mark Ruffalo. It's not a boring documentary, but a very gripping and sad true story. So then what does all this have to do with Latin America? Well, just like in the United States, every Latin American restaurant's loaded with aluminum pots and pans. That you just can't avoid, so eat at home, I guess. But as to the original question about stainless steel sinks, now, I have to admit, 99.9% of all the sinks in Latin America are stainless steel. I'm talking about kitchen sinks now, not bathroom sinks. The truth is, 99% of bathroom sinks are made out of porcelain. That's a good thing. And the problem with stainless steel sinks? Well, it's the same problem you have with stainless steel anything. They really only look good for the first couple of weeks you have them. Then they start looking cheap and scruffy, and they stain, and they water spot, and they collect grit. They're just murder to clean and get back into a decent looking shape. You know, the guy that invented stainless steel, I like to punch that guy right in the kisser. Why? Because no bigger lie, no bigger oxymoron was ever invented. Stainless steel? The other big problem is stainless steel sinks are rather thin, so they aren't sturdy at all. They flex. Look, you could grab the faucet or the spout, mount it on any so-called stainless steel sink. You know you can bend and vibrate the thing with very little effort. And the reason why nearly every kitchen sink is made out of stainless steel? They're very cheap compared to porcelain. And they're about a tenth as heavy as a porcelain sink. So you could stack them one on top of each other like folding chairs, and they're cheap as hell to ship. Now, of course, if you go into a decent plumbing or kitchen shop, they sell porcelain sinks down here too. Even the classic high-end U.S. brands like Kohler. Though they're two or three times as expensive as a stainless steel sink, but to me they're well worth the extra cost. In fact, people who know me, people who've been in my houses over the years, they'll tell you I haven't got a single stainless steel sink. I won't have them. They drive me nuts. Of course, if you're in a rental, you've got no choice. So the first thing I do if I buy a house, or build one, whatever, is insist on porcelain sinks. Though there are some other very good options too, like for example, Corian, granite, or marble sinks, but those are very high-end. Though, if you've got the dough, why not? And that stuff is available here. When speaking of things that'll irritate you the rest of your life if you're stuck with them, my advice if you're building or buying a house, condo, apartment, whatever, is to have porcelain sinks. But a word of advice, do not go for white or light-colored sinks or toilets. You will regret it. Why? Because almost all the water in Latin America, especially in Central America, it filters through rock and volcanic sediment, so it picks up lots of minerals. In other words, what's coming out of your tap is almost always hard water, which eventually leaves very difficult to remove hard water stains. And that stuff builds up over the months and years, and eventually you'll not be able to remove it at all unless you've got a razor blade, thick rubber gloves, and some acid, and a couple hours to spare. Then again, if you've got a maintenance guy or a cleaning lady, you can train them up. And believe me, you'll have to train them up, because Latin Americans are so used to having permanently stained rings around the sinks and toilets that it just doesn't bother them. They consider it normal. But it's not. So the trick is to use dark-colored sinks and toilets, because the darker you go, the less you'll see that stain. And if you have black or dark gray porcelain toilets and sinks, you might not notice those hard water stains at all. Though in time, they will dull the brilliant sheen of porcelain. By the way, here in Latin America, those mineral deposits are called sado. It sounds a lot like the English word sorrow. That's sado. That's the word Latinos use for hard water stain. Oh, and look out if you got light-colored tile in your bathroom. That's another big mistake, because it will happen. Your shower tile will eventually get loaded up with that sado too. And if you're picky or sort of a detailed person, it'll drive you nuts. Then again, you can always train up your maintenance guy or cleaning lady, though it is a thankless job. All it takes is a razor blade, gloves, and the proper solvents, and someone with more patience than brains who's willing to do it. So again, an important tip here, avoid light-colored shower tiles. And of course, avoid light-colored grout, called sisa, here in Latin America. Grout is called sisa. By the way, this might sound a little bit anal, but every time I take a shower, I wipe down the glass partition. Oh, I should mention that most decent or upscale showers here in Latin America don't have a curtain. They have an actual shower door or a plate glass stationary partition. And if you just give it a quick wipe with your towel, doesn't even have to be perfectly dry. All it takes is 10 seconds after you've taken your shower, and that glass will remain nice and clear and clean. If not, if you don't put in that 10 seconds of effort, after a couple of months, a thin film of hard water stain will accumulate on that too. And soon enough, it'll look like someone did a bad sandblasting job on it. And the only antidote, once again, is to set someone to work with a razor blade scraping it down. Now, don't get me wrong, it's not a thick coating. For it to get that bad, it takes years. But even a very light accumulation of that scum makes a bathroom look second rate. So again, remember that word sado if you're at the hardware store looking for cleaning products. Oh, and by the way, at the hardware store, you'll see a number of products that claim to remove that stuff. Most of them don't. It takes a razor blade solvent and some elbow grease, believe me. Look, here we are in the 21st century, and they still haven't got a product that can dissolve it away nice and easy. Though it's not something people think about until it gets good and ugly and embarrassing looking. I mean, really, do you want company to see those scummy stalactites growing in your shower stall? I don't think so. But, you know, since Latinos are not big on details, 99.9% of them, rich or poor, will have scummy, mineral-stained toilets, sinks, and shower stalls. You'll soon find that out as you visit people's homes and go into their bathrooms and kitchens. Oh, and about training up your maintenance guy and cleaning lady. That's another thing that might bother you if you're a picky or detailed person. You'll find they just don't go after the dirt, the smudges, and the grit, especially in bathrooms, kitchens, and around windows. I just don't get it. People with full-time cleaning ladies have dirty houses. And get this, even wealthy Latinos with two or three cleaning ladies don't have a single vacuum cleaner in the house. How is that possible? So that means when you first get a cleaning lady, you're going to have to use that old trick of running your finger across the top of picture frames to show her it's a place to be cleaned or she won't do it. For example, there's nothing that drives me up a wall more than to walk into a wealthy person's house, a person who's got a live-in cleaning lady. And when you go to flip a wall switch, you notice a gray halo of finger smudges around the switch plate. It's something that a spritz of Windex and a damp rag would fix, but no one's doing it. Don't you think a cleaning lady would have figured that out? Especially one who's been living and working in that house for years? What's that say about the boss lady of the house? Details, details. That's why they call it the third world, right? Oh, and by the way, you can still say cleaning lady, muchacha. You don't have to say cleaning person. In fact, if you did that, Latinos wouldn't know what the hell you were talking about. Man, am I glad I'm living in Latin America. Oh, and speaking of cleaning ladies and cleaning men, you know, I have to say I've never met a cleaning guy. Though Captain Mango has a cleaning guy. I've never met him. But you see, apparently this guy cleans offices as his main job and not houses, the exception being Captain Mango's pad. So how'd that happen? Well, it's a long story. If you're coming down to my January Expat Insider Seminar, you can ask Captain Mango yourself. He'll be hanging with us the whole time. Oh, and for info for the upcoming seminar, just go to expatplanb.com. One last thing about sinks. The last place I lived in, I bought a Kohler sink, black. Cost me something like $250, but man, was it worth it. Though I could have picked up a stainless steel sink for $50 or $75, I knew better, believe me. Oh, and by the way, in all the time I've been down here in Latin America, I've never been in a kitchen that had a garbage disposal, otherwise known as an incinerator. Why? Because Incinerator, the company, invented those things. That said, there was always one person that had an incinerator here in Latin America, and that was me. Yep, you can get them down here all right. The big hardware stores all carry them. But again, I've never known a single person besides myself who ever installed one. Same goes with trash compactors. You can get them down here. But I've never been in a home or a kitchen that had one. All right, now, Frankie's got another part to this email. He says, Johnny, regarding your recent report from Antigua, Guatemala, about restaurant owners. He says, Johnny, I don't have the insight of an owner. I'm only a customer, but I see lots of restaurants have remained open through the pandemic. I think the city of Antigua as well is pretty much open, though most restaurants are only doing takeout service, which you can pick up the food yourself or use one of the handful of home delivery services which have come to the fore since the beginning of this thing. I see many restaurants appear to be doing this. This Friday, I took a ride in an Uber and I saw restaurant doors were open. I think soon most restaurants may be able to have regular dining customers inside, though only seating a percentage of their usual customer base. It all depends on government restrictions and what the president says. Signed, Frankie. All right, Frankie, thanks for that. Then comes an email from Annie in Costa Rica. She says, Johnny, tourism is dead. Well, Costa Ricans, most of whom spend everything they have on showing off, looking good, buying high-end phones and brand-name clothes when they can, they're really feeling the pain. But that's what you get when a black swan event comes and your whole economy is based on tourism. Now, Johnny, believe it or not, the government's announced a new round of taxes. Yeah, right, that's exactly what you should do when there's no tourism and business is dead. Take even more blood out of the anemic survivors. So, Johnny, you might ask, what am I doing in Costa Rica? Well, my cousin lives here. She's married to a Costa Rican hotel owner in Guanacaste, and they're dying on the vine, too. Doesn't anyone ever save for a rainy day anymore, Johnny? So I came down to Costa Rica 3 months ago for a two-week vacation, and I've been sidelined with the quarantine and airport restrictions ever since. Now, some flights are scheduled, so I'll be leaving next week. Then it's back to Nevada for me. I'll work on my plan B for a couple more months and quite possibly make it to your seminar if you've got any openings. Can you put me on the list for a female roommate? But please, no smoking, no snoring, no tats, no breathing. Just kidding, John. Signed, Annie. All right, thanks for that, Annie. Oh, and Annie, I do have a roommate for you. She's a real nice lady for a self-mutilating bulimic Scientologist. Just kidding. And, you know, it just goes to show, to reinforce the fact that the tourism business is very fickle. When there's any kind of crisis, social, financial, or otherwise, the first business to suffer is tourism. It just goes to show, too, that people never think the good times are going to end. You know, one of the top five investment questions I get from gringos, expats, gonna-bes, and wannabes has been about buying properties to rent and to turn into Airbnbs down here. And my response has always been, hey, look, we're in a big bubble. I wouldn't take the chance. And since regular people and investors thought it would never end, there are still massive numbers of units coming online and in construction right now. Even in good times, that did not bode well for the Airbnb or hotel industry. Take Panama, even before the pandemic. In the last 2 years, a good 30 to 40% of hotels and Airbnbs have not been booked enough to break even. Now, speaking of the rapidly deflating Latin American real estate bubble, probably the worst businesses of all to be in right now are hotels, restaurants, and Airbnbs. That said, I was just having a look at the Prensa Libre, that's Guatemala's biggest daily newspaper, and they've got a new article out entitled, New Home Construction in Guatemala. Now, this will surprise you. It says, in the country's metropolitan area, that's Guatemala City, population 3 million, there are right now, at this moment, 16,000 homes under construction, most of which are apartments that will be available in the coming months. Man, I'll tell you, how optimistic these brain-dead reporters are who write this stuff, huh? Even though that's what it says in the first paragraph, I doubt most of them will ever be completed. The builders and contractors don't have the dough, and a lot of the owners who pre-bought, who put money down, will likely back out and lose their investment. On top of that, it says there are currently 112 real estate projects and residential towers under construction. Wow, are you getting this? So even before this COVID thing became the pin that popped the bubble, Guatemala City and practically every medium and large city in Latin America has been extremely overbuilt. So I ask you, in the case of Guatemala City, where are the 16,000 buyers or renters going to come from? What, with 30 to 50% of renters behind on their rent for last month? And I've also heard some very strong rumors to the effect that 30 to 40% of high-end condo owners haven't paid last month's maintenance yet. Imagine that. You're an owner and you can't even afford to pay your own maintenance. That's a very bad sign, but not for anyone who's looking to buy. And maintenance, even in a high-end residential tower, is usually not much more than $100 a month. Well, here's my analysis. I say right around January, around the first of the year, that will be a golden opportunity for anyone who's got cash to snap up practically any piece of real estate for 50 to 75 cents on the dollar. And I mean in most places in Latin America. In fact, I've been getting on the real estate pages of OLX.com every day now for the past 6 months or so. And I've noticed a strange kind of phenomena. More and more houses and condos are coming online every day. Yet when you look back 4, 5, even 6 months in the past, you mostly see the same properties being listed over and over again. They're not selling, but the owners and realtors are trying to make them look like new listings. Thing is, when you first list a property on OLX.com, or even a car or motorcycle, whatever, the thing is, when you first list it, it'll be number one on the page, first one at the top. And as other people pile in, it'll slowly slip down to the second page, then the third page, then the fourth page, and so on. And believe me, people are looking to buy a house or a motorcycle, whatever. Just like a Google search, people will only look at the first and maybe the second page, but probably not. So what sellers are doing then is relisting the same properties over and over. Then that property will be right on top, first on the list again. So it's kind of a game sellers are playing. They're trying to outwit and outdo the other listings to get on that first page, just like Google rankings. So just realize, if you're a buyer, the houses and condos you see on that first page, a good percentage are not new listings at all. It's just the seller or the realtor re-upping an old listing that never sold, that's been up there 6 months, a year, even more. Oh, and if you check that site a lot and you have a good eye, you'll notice the asking prices are slipping down too. For example, I've been watching this one property. It started out at $260,000. First listed about 3/4 of a year ago. And it's been relisted, re-upped on that page about every month. And every time it reappears, the price drops from $3,000 to $5,000. And now that same property's at $215,000. And I think when January rolls around, you should be able to get it for $190,000, maybe even $175,000. And again, the original asking price, $260,000. And believe me, this place, it's a mansion. The problem is, you see, you have to get boots on the ground. You have to do those visual inspections yourself. Sure, sellers always post pictures on the internet, but you really never know till you see it with your own eyes. Though there's one interesting, even amusing thing about Latinos when they post things for sale on the internet. I'd say 3/4 of the time, maybe even more, they don't even bother trying to hide or obfuscate obvious defects like water damage, mold, scratched up doors, cracked tile. Sometimes you can't believe it. You'll see photos of a bedroom with the bed unmade and a pile of dirty laundry on the floor. Or a bathtub or sink or a jacuzzi with a ring of scum around it. And those are the photos that are supposed to present the place in its best light. In a way, I guess that's in our favor. They're not trying to Photoshop or fool anyone. That, unlike most Americans, when they put up something for sale, they'll give it a good once-over and definitely won't show you mold, unmade beds, cracked windows, or the dirty clothes hamper or putty tats litter box. However, in Latin America, anything goes. Though I have to say, if you're looking for a car on OLX.com, I rather like the fact that what you see is what you get. Because unlike Americans, rarely will a Latino want to fork out $50 or $100 to get his car professionally detailed. Though for us, the prospective buyers, there's nothing like seeing a used car before the detailers get it. All right, now I'd like to lay a few comments on you regarding living in Guatemala and Central America in general. Now, every so often I get emails from people saying, Johnny, I know you don't recommend Mexico, but I also hear news and web stories from people saying they don't recommend Guatemala because of narco-terrorism. And of course, now with all the chaos and the COVID and the lockdowns and the bursting of the everything bubble, a lot of smart gringos and expats who were on the fence before are on the move now. You've heard stories just lately, I'm sure, about people moving from big cities and trying to get the hell out of Dodge and moving to the boonies. Some people think that is a good plan B. Yeah, right. Like that's going to save them when they're still living under the thumb of Big Brother and the totally bankrupt military, industrial, banking, and big pharma complex. Good luck with that. If you think moving to the boonies is going to save you from what's coming next, then you probably think that voting actually makes a difference and the U.S. dollar is backed by gold, too, right? So for all you out there who are saying to yourself, yeah, I know the feces has hit the ventilator, and I thought about going to Latin America, specifically the Altiplano in Guatemala, but I'm afraid because I've heard from people supposedly in the know that it's a narco state. Well, here's my answer to that. Those supposed people in the know who write that stuff and blog on the internet, I'd be willing to bet you 10 to 1 they've never been to the places I talk about and recommend. Though maybe they blew in for a weekend or two, but I doubt even that. You know, when confronted with naysayers that seem to know what they're talking about, ask them this question. What's the Altiplano? Ask them if they've ever been there. Again, I bet you 10 to 1 they don't even know a single person who lives there. Nor could they show you on a map, nor could they point out the tremendously positive effect it has on general living and growing conditions. So here's the thing. You either get your information second or third hand from people with good intentions, who really have no substantial living experience or boots on the ground, or from people who just blew in for a week or two, or folks who were on do-gooder missions or in the Peace Corps 10 or 20 years ago. True, their info is better than nothing, but it's flawed. For example, I've been to Berlin two or three times, stayed 3 or 4 days each time, so you could say I know Berlin, but in reality, I don't know dick about Berlin. Not really. So who do you trust? Someone with second or third-hand information who might have blown in or out for a couple of weeks, or from people who actually live the life and walk the walk? Now, of course, that might include me. That is, if you happen to trust a guy who came down knowing zero Spanish and then proceeded to live 30 years south of the border, almost exclusively off the Gringo tourist trail. By the way, did you know I've only been back to the USA for 2 weeks in all that time? And that was pre-9/11. So you could say a guy like me, who's been living and hanging out in Latin America for 30 years now, you might say I know slightly more about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great than the next guy. And you know, that's exactly why the people who come to my seminar always say things like, man, Johnny, I can't believe that the mainstream media gets things so wrong. That's why you have to come down and see it for yourself. And you know, for those in doubt, the seminar always answers questions and clears up the doubts. Though in the end, everyone has to decide what they want to believe and what's the best for them. I personally think living in the U.S. is a curse and it all kicked into high gear after 9/11. Even having a plan B out in the boonies is not going to save you. You have to realize it's going to get much worse. And when I call back to the States and talk to my friends and family, all I hear is that they're walking on eggshells. They're terrified about the future. And they all tell me to a person that I'm the luckiest guy they know. Why? Because I got out of Dodge early, before anyone even thought of getting out. Now, you know the U.S. is making its final swirl around the toilet bowl. Then again, I could be wrong because I don't live there. After all, I'm getting my information about the States second and third hand, too.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.